Hi, this is Kenny Kramer, the real Kramer, and you're listening to WGXC Acra. And as Cosmo would say, giddy up.
Listening to Zach Poff's Pawn Station, available at wavefarm.org/listen. If you click on the listen button on any WGXC.org page, you can hear the sounds from the bottom of one of the Wave Farm ponds, thanks to the hydrophones Zach Poff has put there. The radio artist is surveilling the underwater sounds in Greene County, and you can go to wavefarm.org/listen and click on any WGXC.org page and click on the listen button to listen to transmissions from inside a Wave Farm pond from morning until sundown from Zach Poff's Pond Station.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanitta, the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Food New York in New York, New York. WGXC local business supporters help us continue to be a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement. Thank you, Food New York.
Worry about me. Why you got to give me a fight? Can't you just let it be? I'm all right. Don't nobody worry about me. You got to give me a fight. Why don't you just let me be? Do what you like, doing it naturally. But if it's too easy, you gotta disagree. It's your I'm all right. Nobody worry about me. Why you got to give me?
Introing with Cavusi's cover of I'm All Right, Corey McCaslin welcomes you to Forgotten Geek Presents and Multiversal Movie Casting Couch, where between sets of movie themes, I'll be passing on some decently researched trivia regarding those who could have starred in your favorite movies or franchises. I specify my researching because there is a site, notstarring.com, dedicated to this, but right off the bat, it became apparent it's less well-vetted than IMDb. For an example that leads into our first set, they list Ellen DeGeneres as a candidate to play Vesper Lynn, the woman that broke a young James Bond's heart but saved his life in Casino Royale. Some deep Googling didn't even turn up evidence that there was ever a joke she made about that on her talk show. So our first music set is some rejected Bond themes, and then I'll be back with some of the many men considered to bear the 007 codename. Here's Johnny Cash's version of Thunderball.
There's a rumble in the sky and all the world can hear it call. They shudder at the fury of the mighty thunderball.
Thunderball.
The power of her engines now is drowned in the sea. But the deadly force from within her is somewhere running free. Thunderball, your fiery breath can burn the coldest man. And who is going to suffer from the power in your hand?
Thunderball.
Somewhere there is a man who could stop the thing in time. He's known by very few, but he's feared by all in crime.
All in crime.
By courage and by fighting, he has not been known to fall. But neither has the fury of the mighty Thunderball.
Thunderball.
Thunderball, your fiery breath can burn the coldest man. And who is going to suffer from the power in your hand?
Thunderball.
Money-hungry minds need a threat to launch a scheme. But those who hold the thunderball could rule the world, it seems.
Wow.
Cannot the peaceful world find a clue to where she's gone? The silent sea won't answer now, but terror lingers on.
Lingers on.
Thunderball, your fiery breath can burn the coldest man. And who is going to suffer from the power in your hand?
Thunderball.
Thunderball.
That set of unused Bond themes started with Johnny Cash's take on Thunderball, then Alice Cooper's version of The Man with the Golden Gun. Now for some of the actors that in another timeline were sliding into the Aston Martin. For the first Bond theatrical movie, Dr. No, Barry Nelson betrayed Jimmy Bond in a 1954 TV adaptation of Casino Royale. Cary Grant and David Niven were in the mix, as was number 6 himself, Patrick McGoohan. Roger Moore was a favorite, but already associated with the Saint. Also considered was Richard Johnson, whose career in Britain goes back to the dawn of TV, but is most known to American audiences for his role in Lucio Fulci's Zombie, aka the movie with a zombie fighting a shark. When they had to replace their first replacement for Connery in Diamonds Are Forever, for the record, Lazenby blames that on listening to his very stupid agent telling him the Bond fad was over. Dumbledore recast Michael Gambon was a favorite but turned it down because he felt he wasn't in the best physical shape to play it. John Gavin, most famous as Sam Loomis in Psycho, was also considered. They went back to Connery ultimately, but when that turned out to be a one-off and they had to find a new blunt weapon for Live and Let Die, their list went outside of the UK. Burt Reynolds and Clint Eastwood turned it down. Adam West also turned it down, to some stated regret. Back in the Kingdom, top Sherlock Jeremy Brett was considered, as was Julian Glover, best known to American audiences as the villain who chose poorly in Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. Uncertainty surrounding Moore's continued involvement during production of For Your Eyes Only and Octopussy, the latter being the first Bond movie I remember seeing, led to Timothy Dalton being approached for the first time. And Thanos' daddy, James Brolin, shot a screen test that most considered more of a bargaining chip against Moore. When it came time to truly replace Moore, they wanted Pierce Brosnan, but then NBC screwed him over by changing their minds about canceling Remedy and Steel. Jumping forward over a decade to GoldenEye, Mel Gibson and Hugh Grant were approached, as was Liam Neeson. Self-proclaimed Lazenby of Doctor Who, Paul McGann, was a finalist, as was the future Lord of Winterfell who replaced him in Sharpe's War, Sean Bean, who was given the consolation role of Trevelyan. Finally, for the gritty post-Bourne reboot proper adaptation of Casino Royale, eventual reboot Dr. McCoy and Dredd, Carl Urban, ER's Goran Visnjic, and Sam Worthington were up for it. Henry Cavill was decided to be too young, and Doug Ray Scott, who famously lost out on playing Wolverine thanks to Tom Cruise's MI2 reshoot demands, was also passed over. Now our next set of themes starts with Jude Cole's title-dropping theme for Back to School.
Take you over the limit. You know I'm only looking out for you. Get lucky, I get lucky, and I see you get lucky too. I'll be there when you get there, right? That's the beauty of living my life. Hold on, baby, I'm taking you back to school.
Back Mon poste de pin. Le gosse ton navki.
last set began with Jude Cole's theme to Rodney Dangerfield's Back to School. Then from the movie that broke the internet and ended my brief flirtation with Twitter was Tamachika, Oniyako Tsubaki, Naomi Watanabe, and Shizuo Yamasaki's J-pop theme for Ghostbusters Answer the Call. And it ended with one of the first songs I played on this station, Jennifer Saunders covering Holding Out for a Hero for Shrek 2. Going back to the first song, The Unreliable Not Starring says Jim Carrey auditioned to play the history professor role in the 1987 Harold Ramis directed comedy. And I mention it because I could see Rodney pushing for Sam Kinison, but everyone else wanted a fallback in case Sam was Sam. Also, if you're one of the unfortunate like me to have seen the Rodney and Murray-less Caddyshack 2, they had no control over Ted Knight being dead, and while he was clearly collecting a paycheck, Chevy was still one of the best things about it. You might have wondered why Randy Quaid's accountant character is so angry, and so not your typical Quaid character. That's because when Rodney was still going to return, he wanted Kinison in that role, and when he dropped out, so did Sam out of loyalty, and they didn't bother to rewrite the character. The original Ghostbusters movie, there was that bad 70s series with Larry Storch and a gorilla that became an animated series in the 80s to capitalize on the movie's successful title theft. That's why the actual Ghostbusters movie-inspired cartoon is called The Real Ghostbusters. Anyways, it was originally envisioned by Aykroyd as a vehicle for himself, John Belushi, Chevy Chase, and Eddie Murphy. Eddie famously chose to do Beverly Hills Cop instead, which led to poor Ernie Hudson signing on after reading that draft, only to discover his role had been drastically reduced. John Candy was the original choice for annoying neighbor Louis Tully for Rick Moranis, but wanted to play the character as an eccentric French-Canadian. Sandra Bernhardt was also considered for Secretary Janine. Not Starring rightly lists Paul Reubens as final boss Gozer, or rather his penultimate form, but gets the reason why not wrong. They say he turned it down, but I have read slash heard straight from Reitman and the cast that the former was inspired by seeing an androgynous punk singer to make that the penultimate form of the Destroyer, the original plan being to have the man known as Pee-wee portray Tobin, the author of that essential spirit guide, in photos before showing up at the end as the face Gozer chooses. The cast and super agent Mike Ovitz were against it, but agreed to run through the scene, which changed their mind. Before our next set, here's one bonus fact related to my doc and podcast recommendation on original Flavor Forgotten Geek. Gilbert Gottfried was beat out by David Johansen for the role of the cabbie of Christmas Past in Scrooged. He said the one that stings more was losing a part to legendary little person actor Billy Barty in a Mel Brooks movie. Granted, it was Life Stinks, considered the worst Brooks movie until Dracula Dead and Loving It, though I liked it, and hey, it's still a Mel Brooks movie. Heading in the next half hour here on WGXC 90.7 Acre Casco Hudson for Forgotten Geek Presents Multiversal Casting Couch. Our next set is Blaxploitation themes, starting with the Mighty Showstoppers theme for Shaft in Africa. We'll be right back. Heard a set starting with Shaft in Africa by the Mighty Showstoppers, and then Herbie Hancock's theme to the spook who sat by the door. Now here is Dan the Automator and DJ Shadow's take on the off-sampled theme to the cult classic Indian movie Dawn.
Yes? Who's it?
Dawn.
Of hell. Bang, bang.
your special dream. Larger than life, it's gonna make you wanna scream. It's the latest rage and the latest hit. Now here it comes. You asked for it. It'll bring you pleasure and bring you some pain. But I promise you this, you'll never be the same.
Last set started with Dan the Automator and DJ Shadow's cover of Theme from Dawn. Then B-movie favorite Wings Hauser doing the theme from Vice Squad, Neon Slime. And we ended with what might as well be called a love theme from Batman Returns, Susie and the Banshees Face to Face. Which brings us to our last trip to the multiversal casting couch, the Caped Crusaders Cinematic Adventures. Tim Burton's Batman looked at many big, more expected than Mr. Mom names. Mel Gibson, Kevin Costner, Charlie Sheen, Harrison Ford, and Dennis Quaid were floated around, as was Tom Selleck, who famously lost out on Indiana Jones due to his Magnum PI contract. Keaton wasn't the only funny man considered to be fit into molded fiberglass and plastic. We could have seen Bill Murray instead. Legend has it Willem Dafoe was a Joker candidate, but Burton actually wanted him as the Bat. Pierce Brosnan turned him down, probably waiting for his next shot at Bond. Actual Joker candidates were David Bowie, James Woods, Ray Liotta, and Tim Curry, who did voice the Clown Prince in one episode of the classic 90s animated series, but they decided he was too scary, and wouldn't you know it, Luke Skywalker just regaled him with his version of that character while recording a different guest spot. I've also heard Liotta was a candidate for Batman, and he has said he turned it down because he couldn't conceive of a non-campy take on the character. Robin Williams also lobbied for the role of the Joker. John Lithgow said to his regret he talked his way out of essaying the Joker when he screen tested, feeling he wasn't right, which is ironic because Joe Dante backed out directing after he realized he was more interested in casting Lithgow in that role than doing an actual Batman movie. Burton also wanted Brad Dourif or John Glover, Clamp in Gremlins 2 / Lionel Luthor in Smallville / Savannah's dad in Shazam, for the Hood originally known as Jack Napier, but Warners wanted a name star. When it came time for the villains Batman returned against, Annette Bening was cast as Selina Kyle, aka Catwoman, but dropped out to complete her lassoing of Warren Beatty, due to pregnancy. Raquel Welch, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Madonna, Ellen Barkin, Cher, Bridget Fonda, Lorraine Bracco, Jennifer Beals, and Susan Sarandon were also considered. For the Penguin, screenwriter Daniel Waters said they only had DeVito in mind. A meta-casting gag was eliminated, however, when Burgess Meredith, cast as the Penguin's father, fell ill and Burton called in Paul Reubens. Marlon Wayans was cast as Robin, but Burton's apathy to the character led to him being cut, though he still got paid. Perhaps proving that he really didn't intend to turn the series into a day-glow bad camp mess, Joel Schumacher's original concept, when he took over, was to adapt Frank Miller's Year One, which Michael Keaton was very interested in, but the studio wanted a direct sequel. With the cowl empty, they looked at Daniel Day-Lewis, Ralph Fiennes, William Baldwin, and Johnny Depp, and were turned down by Ethan Hawke. Bonus fact, he turned down the Will Smith role in Independence Day because he said on paper it was crap, and it took someone with Big Willie's style and charm to spin some gold out of it. Back to the subject, DiCaprio met about playing Robin, but decided against it. Finally, there's some more not-starring buffoonery, as they list that Orson Welles almost made a Batman movie in the 50s starring Gregory Peck. No, no, and no. That was a classic April Fool's gag pulled by comic book resources with the help of some professional comics writers and artists. Closest Welles ever came is a rumor he might have eyed doing a movie version of The Shadow, which makes more sense given his prior relationship with the character. Now, for our last set, we'll hear some themes from some less well-regarded movies, starting with Dragon Sound rallying against the ninja from Miami Connection.
Despite Hanging out.